Hey everyone, welcome back to The Growth Signal, where we are reimagining the future of customer relationships, how we build them, how we keep them, and how we continue to lead as those customer expectations rapidly evolve. My name is Alyssa Nolte.
And I'm Kristen Corral.
And we are going to have a fantastic conversation today. So Kristen, tell us, what is your hot take?
Okay, my hot take is that customers are killing small businesses.
That is a hot take, so let's get into it. Tell us more. What do you mean by that?
Okay, so think about it. Since the pandemic, like, small business owners have been struggling more than ever, right? But customers have become more and more demanding, more volatile, more angry, and less patient. So during the pandemic, everybody kind of was in the same boat, like, let's all rally together, let's support small business, and everyone was really patient. Now I find that more and more my DMs are filled with, like, die because you messed up my burrito, or, you know, you suck, I hate you. And I wonder if small businesses get the brunt of it more than large scale corporations. Like, I don't think when you go to the drive-thru at Taco Bell and they mess up your tacos, like, you're writing Taco Bell and, like, wishing death on them. Like, I just don't think that's happening. So I feel like there's some sort of thing where we want to protect small businesses as a society, but then we also want to lash out on them and kind of treat them differently than we treat Amazon and Walmart and all of these other corporations. So that's kind of, like, where I'm coming from these days. And I'm trying to struggle to figure out, like, how we mesh these things together and, like, get it back on track.
I've never really thought about it that way. But unfortunately, I think you're 100% right, because it's almost like consumers expect small businesses to give them the same level of service that they get from a major organization that has basically unlimited resources to respond to your requests and to deliver food at a cheaper price, because they have access to all the supply chains and all those benefits. And yet they realize that they're never going to get Taco Bell's attention, but they can get a single individual. So it's like they both expect you to have everything in line and figured out and cost optimized like a big corporation, and yet to give them the time, attention, and service that they expect from a small business owner.
Exactly.
Like, it's the worst of both worlds.
Right. And not even held to, like, the same standard. Like, that's what I feel like also the issue is like, when you go, sorry, I keep using Taco Bell as an example, but, like, if you go to Walmart or something, like, you don't have high expectations. So you're just like, whatever, like, it's messed up, or I got poor customer service. It is what it is. But when you go to a small business, it's like they hold us to another standard. So we're not allowed to make mistakes. We're not allowed to fail. We're not allowed to, like, learn and grow. You know, we're just held to this, like, ridiculous standard that's unattainable, because most small business owners are really struggling from all aspects of their business right now.
So there's two things that I would love to tell a little story and then get your opinion on. I'm going to start with, there's a local bakery here in my community that I love. It's called Moose Bakery. Mm-hmm. It's 100% plant-based in our community. And I'm in Iowa, so, like, we don't really have very many options when it comes to that. So she's kind of unique in that way. And one of the things that I love about her is she's not only on social media kind of showing, like, her bakery and her wares and the things that she's selling, but she also brings people into the inside of what it's actually like to have a small business. And, you know, the fact that she has to change her hours quite a bit because, you know, it's just her and life happens, and that she might be understaffed. And, you know, she had a medical emergency a month ago. And recently she had someone leave a comment on one of her posts that was like, I wish you would spend less time complaining about your business and more time selling me the cookies. And it was, she responded to it very well. I probably would have been like, then don't buy my freaking cookies. Like, go away then. But she responded and said, you know, you have to understand that when you're a small business owner, when you're a solopreneur, when you're the only one here, the quality of the experience that you're getting can totally change depending on who I am as an individual that day. And the person just, like, clapped back and was like, you're a business. Stop complaining. So how do we get people to see that there are real human beings behind these screens and the keyboards that you're sending things through, and realize that when you're just one or two or even three people, you just don't have the ability to do the same things that a mega corporation does?
Yeah, I think it's difficult. I think we live in a society where people are so used to getting things just, like, right away.
Yeah, so the Amazon effect.
Yes, 100%. So when they don't get that like instant kind of gratification of a response, whether it's a comment or this or that, they get very frustrated. I'll give you an example. I got an email from someone that was complaining the other day. And when I didn't respond within an hour, she went to social media, like in this vegan group that we have here, and started going off about how she didn't get it. And it's like, you're not, it's been an hour. Like, I'm eating dinner. Like, please. But to your point, I think what that woman is doing is 100% how we kind of get people to understand what we're going through. Being transparent on social media, humanizing your brand, those kinds of things start to allow people behind the curtain and let them see like what we're really dealing with. I see that a lot on social media. I saw another bakery. I don't know where she was, but she does it a lot too. And she got a 1-star review because she removed nuts from her bakery. And it was like a donut shop. It wasn't even a full bakery. Like, who cares? It wasn't even that big of a deal. And people were like leaving her 1-star reviews because she removed nuts because one of her customers' daughters had like a severe allergy. So she went on social media and explained that situation. Right. And I mean, there was a lot of mixed comments, but for the most part, people rallied behind her and was like, thank you for doing that, like supporting people with allergies. But she was transparent about why she did it. And like transparent about the fact that like leaving me that 1-star review does nothing. Like, I'm a small business, like you're hurting me. Right. So I think the more people are transparent about their struggles in general as small business owners, I think the more we can kind of get behind them or us.
Well, and I think people don't also realize like what a 1-star review can do to a business when you're just fighting for visibility. I saw one recently that was like, you know, didn't even try it, didn't feel like driving across town to get it, 1-star. And it's like, but you, what you don't realize is that that 1-star drags their rating down and can really significantly impact their ability to show up in the algorithms and social media. Like, your 1-star review that you didn't even try the business or give them a fair shot means that they might miss out on their sales goals for that month or their ability to pay their rent.
100%. And now more than ever, everything's linked. Like, it's not like you have to go to Yelp to see that review. It's now plastered on Google and now it's integrated into AI. Now Instagram is changing so that like our Instagram posts have to be optimized for SEO because those are now going to be shown on Google. There's all these different things that people don't realize that we all have to deal with. We're all wearing like a million hats. So like, we have to be like a finance expert. We have to be an operations expert. We have to be an influencer, a social media expert. There's all these hats that small businesses are wearing and it's always changing. So like you said, that 1-star review can drag us down and then follow us forever around the internet.
Right. And there's nothing you can do. It's not like you can be like, hey, Google, they didn't even like here. You're not getting Google's attention on that. I believe that maybe not now, but in the next several years, we're going to start seeing a diagnosis, if you will, of what I'm calling main character syndrome, where everybody thinks of themselves as the main character in their own story and everybody else is just a supporting character. Because I see that all over. I'm in one of these like food groups on Facebook where people are like reviewing restaurants, right? And it's so funny to me because it's called like the foodies group. And yet you'll get a restaurant of like a McDonald's, which is fine. Like McDonald's is technically food.
Yeah.
But the reason it was started as like, you know, local restaurants who are trying to grow and like people who want to experience great food that's unique to the area. And the number of people who will go in there and write a review about their personal experience as if it is gospel and the exact experience that everybody's going to have if they walk in there. And they will throw down and fight in the comments if anyone says, you know what, I had a different experience, and act as if surprised that other people can have different experiences when it's a different time of day, a different server, a different situation, or even like a brand new restaurant versus an established restaurant, right? And it is kind of scary to me that these people are out there with this idea that their experiences are the only ones that are valid.
Right.
And their understanding of the world is the only one that matters.
Yeah. No. And I love like main character syndrome. It's so accurate. Like, it could not be more accurate because it's all about like me. What do I get? What am I doing? And not really considering like everyone else's feelings. And I guess like, how do we get to a place where we're more sympathetic of people? You know, we're allowing space for people to make mistakes in all businesses. I mean, large businesses make mistakes too, not just small businesses, but it's more effective to the customer when a small business makes mistakes and they're less accepting of it, you know?
So why do we think we expect more of a small business than we expect of a big business?
I honestly don't know. Like, I could never, and maybe because I'm a small business owner, I could never imagine, even when I've had horrific experiences at places, you know, in the last 20 years or whatever, I would never, ever go, number one, and leave, like, some ridiculous review, or number two, like, troll them on social media. Like, I just can't get behind that mindset.
I don't have time for that. Like, no. Who has time for this? Get a life.
People have time. For real. But circling it back to my hot take, if you're a small business owner and you're just struggling with, like, labor, you know, your employees aren't showing up, wages are going up, you know, inflation, tariffs, all of these things are just piling on. And then your customers are just, like, dragging you on social media. You're like, why do I even bother? Like, literally, why do I bother? Because most small business owners are not making millions of dollars. Like, they're just getting through the day to day. They're passionate about what they do. And then being dragged by customers just day in and day out is enough to just make you go, like, hey, like, I'm done. I'm out. And I see it all the time. I see people just kind of folding and, you know, folding for a variety of reasons, not just that, but that's just, like, piling on and saying, like, you know what? I don't need this. I'll just go work a 9-to-5. And I don't want to say that everybody's bad, because that's not the case. I just think that there is this kind of, like, deep-seated, like, underlying anger that's building, and I'm just worried that it's going to get worse.
I agree with you 100%. And how much of it do you think is, like when COVID happened and we all kind of got forced home and we got really comfortable being online and being able to say things that we would never maybe actually say to someone's face, but we're comfortable behind our keyboards? How much of that do you think is, like, backlash from that period of time?
It feels to me, in my businesses, like that's when things really started to shift. Like, during the pandemic, everyone, like I said, was fabulous. And then after, like, as we came out of it, and of course, like, politics plays a role in it, like, people got polarized, and that's a whole other issue. But I just think, like, I don't know what happened to us as a society, like, in that kind of 2-year period, but it definitely shifted people's attitudes, people's personalities, people's level of tolerance and impatience. So again, like, it's been, but now we're in 2025. So, like, why are we still stuck in that? Or has it just changed us as a society forever?
I think maybe some of it has. I had this conversation with someone recently. So in addition to my 9-to-5, I coach a high school dance team. Oh. And one of the conversations at a coaching conference was like, I just don't know how to get these kids to be more resilient, right? Like, you give them feedback and they crumble.
Yes.
And I've been doing this for like 15 years. So I've seen a whole, like, group of kids come through. And I finally kind of stopped there and I said, hey, I think we maybe just need to recognize that, like, globally, we went through a form of trauma, right? Whether to whatever degree it impacted your life. And the kids that are in high school now were in, like, early junior high when all of this happened, like, really formative years. And so maybe we just give them a pass for a little bit and see if the next generation comes through and kind of fixes it. And my kids that are coming in now are completely different than my kids that were in junior high when this all happened. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that that is going to be true for our society as a whole, because we cannot exist in a functional society with this level of polarization and just, like, lack of patience with each other as human beings.
Yeah, no, I agree. Also, sidebar, it seems like we have a lot in common. You're plant-based, you're a dancer.
I know, right? The dance to small business pipeline is pretty impressive, like, the number of people. But, like, let's jump into that, actually, because you were, you danced in Vegas, and then now you've moved into small business. So tell us a little bit more about your journey. How did you get here, and what drives you to have these conversations and be successful?
Yeah. So I grew up as a competition dancer, like performer, jazz, tap, ballet. And when I graduated high school, I went to work on cruise ships. I eventually landed in Vegas and I was a showgirl here for like 10 years. I worked for every lackluster magician and I ended up doing Peep Show with Holly Madison and Coco towards the end of my career. And then when I was kind of winding down, I was like, what am I going to do? Like, I don't have any valuable skills. Like, I have no
and degree. Dance has such a shelf life. Like, that's what I think people maybe don't realize is, like, you do age out of it quite young.
Yeah, I was like 30 and I could have done it. I mean, there's people like that are still doing it, honestly, that I know, and great for them. I couldn't. But I was just done with the whole industry. And so I was like, I have to start a business. So my first business, I started, the only thing, other thing I care about is animals. So I started a pet care business. And then I taught myself everything in business. I scaled it to six figures pretty quickly. I had like 10 employees. And then in 2018, my husband and I went into business with our other two business partners and we started a restaurant. And so now we own seven restaurants and our main concept is Tacotarian. It's a vegan restaurant, vegan taqueria. We have six locations and we're franchising now. So, and we have a retail line in grocery stores. Yeah, and it's been really popular and really successful. And now I'm just kind of, you know, I've really dialed in on marketing. So I coach a lot of other small business owners on like how to market their business on a budget and how you don't have to spend, you know, millions of dollars or even thousands of dollars to have successful marketing. You can do it really, really well with really limited resources. And so that's kind of my message. And I'm out there like helping other small business owners kind of come up now, especially women who are struggling. And yeah, that's where I'm at.
Well, let's dive into that very specifically, because a lot of the listeners to this podcast are in customer relationship roles. They're either in marketing, they're in sales, they're in like post-customer experience. And I don't know about you, but I feel like the market has fundamentally changed in how they want to be marketed to and what works and what doesn't work compared to like the stuff I would have tried, you know, 10, 15 years ago would not work in this day and age. So if someone is trying to figure out how do they take what they're uniquely good at, what they're interested in, what they care about, right? Because you said, you know, you cared about pets and then obviously moving into the Tacotarian concept. So how do you figure out how to tell your story in a way that feels authentic and connects with the audience that you're trying to connect with?
Yeah, I think authentic is the key word. I think being yourself, a lot of people, I see this a lot. I just did a workshop on like how to engage with local media. And a lot of business owners were like, I don't want to go on camera, or I don't want to, if I'm not perfect, if my makeup's not perfect, or my hair is not perfect, or if I'm this or if I'm that, like people just don't want to put themselves out there. And, you know, back in the day, I don't know how old you are, but when we were growing up, like, you know, Tide and Dove and all of these brands, there was no faces behind them. There was no real people behind them. And as we've grown, like people want to buy from people they know, they trust, and they align with their values. So that's kind of what we're seeing. And people have to just get over themselves and put themselves out there. And like you said, that bakery is a great example. She's putting herself out there. She's showing behind the scenes. Those kinds of things work on social media, but also connecting through other channels. I think people get hung up a lot on social media. Send an email. Check in with your, building your email list is the most like underrated thing in marketing, I feel like. People still don't value email, especially in the restaurant industry. And it's huge. Like our email rate is 45%, our open rate, and
which is still a wild open rate for email. Like that's a pretty impressive open rate.
But I don't send a bunch of junk, number one.
Right.
And sometimes, like every once in a while, like send an email that says, like, hey, how are you? How's it going? Like checking in with you. Like, you're a great customer. We love you. You know, you can set up funnels for like who's spending what amount. And if they hit a certain amount, just check in and be like, oh my gosh, you're the greatest customer ever. Thank you. Love you so much. And like, don't always be asking, like, don't always be so selfish with your marketing. And try to like put yourself in the customer's position. Like when you get 5,000 texts from like, you know, whatever brand, like in my case, White House Black Market, like they send me like 5,000 texts a day. And I'm like, this is not necessary. Sorry to call them out, but send them, like give them the goods. Don't always, and just don't always be asking, you know, give.
I literally canceled the service because I got so sick of their text messages that like, I had like a monthly pest control service with Orkin, and they would come every single month, and I would get like a, we're going to come in 2 days text, and we're going to come in 1 day text, but they were like paragraphs long. And then it was like, and also, would you like this service and that service? And I just got honestly so sick of it that I was like, you know what? I'm going to go with someone else who doesn't bother me so much because I'm so done with getting all of these messages constantly.
Yeah. So,
So one of the things that you made, you said that I want to double click on is the idea of being selfish in your marketing.
Yeah.
And it's so easy as a business owner to think about yourself. Again, that main character syndrome, we all suffer from it. And of course, like you're trying to build a business, you're trying to grow, you're trying to scale, you're trying to get people in the door so you can do what you're ultimately here to do, which is make money. But if you think about it from a selfish perspective versus a customer perspective, like, how do we break out of this me, me, me so that we can talk to our customers in like a you, you, you kind of approach?
Yeah. Well, the easiest way to start doing that is using the word you instead, like in your marketing. So whether it's email or this or that, say I and you. Even if it's your, like me, I have four other partners. They don't know it's necessarily me saying like, hey, I'm so excited you're going to do this thing with us today. Like, let me tell you about it. But using those words instead of our and like just general terms is one thing. I think there was another one that I was going to hit on. I lost my train of thought. But there's just so many ways to kind of flip the script so that you're not being so selfish. Oh, community is the other one. You know, the reason that our restaurants have been really successful is that we've embedded ourselves in our community since day one. Now, what does that look like? We partner with local charities. So when you partner with a local charity and you really partner with them, not just like, hey, we're donating, you know, we're rounding up today for like this fire or that fire, but like really create like a charity partnership. So they have deliverables, you have deliverables, and you're both driving traffic to, let's say, in our case, a special, like a monthly special. Right now we're running a Mexican pizza special. So it's this giant vegan Mexican pizza. We partner with the Nevada SPCA, which is our local no-kill shelter, which is near and dear to my heart. And so they drive people. They promote it on their email, their socials, in their shelter. We promote it on ours. And we've created this kind of cycle where we're like, we're driving people to the charity. The charity's driving people to us. And like, we're both benefiting because at the end of the day, like, we're going to give them a donation based on how many Mexican pizzas we sell. So things like that get people excited, and people come in, yeah, because they love the Mexican pizza, but then other people come in because they just love the animal shelter. And so you're gaining new customers that way, but you're doing it in a way that kind of aligns with the community.
That reminds me of a story that a friend of mine told. He had franchise businesses, right? And so he had a bunch of these locations and he was getting into it. And his big thing was they were like ever present in the community, not just like doing the charity stuff, but they were going to local baseball games and handing out coupons and and really just like kind of guerrilla marketing constantly for all of these different things. And he had someone who was also in the same franchise in a different market saying like, how are you guys doing this? How are you, you know, growing so fast? Because your numbers are looking great. And he listed off all of the things that he was doing to build relationships and seed himself in the community. And the guy responded something like, well, I just don't think I can do all of that. That seems like a lot of work. And my friend's response was basically like, well, then I guess you'll just keep sucking and like having bad numbers. And how many times do you see business owners who say they want this specific outcome, but aren't willing to do what it takes to truly build that community relationship?
Yeah, I see that often. And I think some of it stems from like people are really good at one thing and then they build a business off of it and they forget that like that one thing is probably like in a restaurant, as bad as this sounds, like the food is the easiest part. It's all of the other things that go into building a restaurant that are so hard. So I think people forget like when they start a business, they're either going to have to be really good at all these other things or they're going to have to bring in people that are really good at all these things. I'm a big believer in like DIY and guerrilla marketing. Like you said, I think that nobody can tell your story better than you and nobody knows your product or your service or your brand better than you. So I kind of love that aspect of it. And I think that the people that are really successful generally do that first and they keep everything in house and they kind of learn the ins and outs and then they grow to eventually needing to bring other people in. I also think that what some people do really, really well is make people feel like they're part of the brand. So make it so that it's like you are part of our brand, like make them feel like they're part of your story, whether that's telling like customer stories on social media, reposting their content. There's all these different ways that you can make them feel like they're on your team. And then that way they'll root for you kind of when, you know, the crap hits the fan or whatever, they'll back you. Or when other people are attacking you on social media, your true fans will come and rally for you.
I mean, thinking of all of the incredible people that who are, you know, or aspire to know who are really doing this, who is leading the charge? Who is changing the way we build relationships with our customers?
So the first real like marketing book that I ever read was by Mark Schaefer. It's called The Marketing Rebellion. He has a couple books now. And I saw him speak at a marketing convention and so good. And it's so relevant. I don't even know when that book was written. It's probably like maybe 10 years old now, maybe not that old, but it's just all about how to like humanize yourself and like be human for your brand and show up for your customers in a human way that makes them want to kind of like join you and like rally behind you. And so I would say definitely Mark Schaefer is such a good example of like how to do it right. And if you haven't read his books, highly recommend.
I'm going to add that to my list for sure. I love the idea. I always joke with people, I'm a rebel with a cause when it comes to my marketing and my storytelling. So I'm very excited to check out The Marketing Rebellion. And if someone is really connecting with you, Kristen, and they want more, where can they find you online?
Yeah, you can easily find me on LinkedIn. It's just, you know, LinkedIn/Kristen-Corral, C-O-R-R-A-L. Or if you're on Instagram, it's The Kristen Corral.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me on The Growth Signal. This was a really fascinating conversation.
Thank you so much.